Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You're listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to yet another episode of this podcast in which we are talking about people who care about independent music, punk, hardcore, indie rock, emo, whatever it is. But today is a very special episode for a multitude of reasons. One of them being the fact that this is the 600th episode, which, you know, anytime you got a nice round number, it feels like you're doing something. It feels like people are paying attention to it. And I've gotten compliments recently on the fact that it just, people are like very, very kind in saying that this is consistent. It's a ever-present part of their lives. I love to be that thing that you can rely on week after week and be like, you know what? I'm going to listen to this week's episode. Maybe I'll just let a few of them stack up and listen to it at a later date. Regardless, I am glad you're here for it. And I am glad to welcome today's guest. His name is none other than Jeff Rickley. If you pay attention to independent music, you know Jeff Rickley's name, but he's the vocalist for Thursday, and they're celebrating a lot of things because they're a band, again, just doing really cool shows, really cool tours, but they are focused on the War All the Time anniversary that I think it's the, 20-year anniversary, 21-year anniversary. I'm not exactly sure how it's being demarcated because, you know, there are times where it's like, all right, the world was not counting years when everybody was in COVID lockdown, et cetera, et cetera. But anyways, Jeff is also an author. He put out a book called Someone Who Isn't Me. And I read that thing cover to cover, came out on Rose Books, an incredible independent publisher based out of the New York City area. And Jeff is someone I like to call a friend. I love to hang out with him every time they're playing a show, love to dip in, say what's up. And I just really enjoy him as a human. Spent many times in just small rooms with him, hanging out with him, playing shows with him. And I had never had Jeff on the show. We had run across each other. I was like, yeah, you know, you definitely should do the podcast at some point. And he's like, yeah, you should. Just hit me up. And then I never did. And it, you know, some things just linger. But anyways, we decided to make it official. And it was a great time. Ways that you can get in touch with the show. You can, of course, follow along on all of the socials, as it were, but primarily Instagram, because I don't really mess around with any of the other social media platforms. You can also email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. And also, if you listen to podcasts on YouTube, there's a link in the show notes where you can follow along on the interwebs, as it were, with me publishing these episodes, because I know people love to do that, like at work. As, you know, just an example, you know, maybe you're hanging out with me for hours a day at work, and that's just totally fine. And if you want to support the show for $0, it takes you maybe 30 seconds at most. Go to the Apple Podcast page, leave a rating and review. I know every single podcast in the world asks you to do that, and I'm not special in that regard. So it just helps out the algorithm and discoverability, all of those things help. And then Spotify, you could do the rating. You don't have to leave a review there. So like I said, 30 seconds flat, boom, in and out. And if like literally 10% of the audience of this show does that, it helps out just gangbusters tremendously. So anyways, let's talk about weekly recommendations. I've been doing this thing since the beginning of 2024, where every week I am just dropping some new music that it doesn't have to be new, like new to me. It can be a record that maybe got put out like, you know, 10 years ago or something like that. But usually I try to stick within the, you know, confines of the past few years. But I'm thrilled to talk about this band. It's called Wonderful World. This EP is called Universal Tension. I frankly know nothing about this band besides the fact I think they're from Belgium. They may be from somewhere in the, another nation in the Scandinavian territories, but it's really, really weird hardcore. Like it's angular, but it's also pissed. And it just, I really can't describe other bands that it sounds like, but it actually reminds me of something that like Locking Out would have put out alongside of Planet Mental, except there is also a lot of different things going on. But anyways, this band, Wonderful World, I am absolutely paying attention. It just got delivered to me algorithmically, like many things do. And, you know, like certain things just pop up and are like, what is this? Why do I not know about this? Why am I not following them on social media? Why am I not? And I just love that buzz that you get when you find a new band. So that's why I'm doing these weekly recommendations. So check out that band, Wonderful World. The EP is called Universal Tension. They have another EP or demo that came out before this. So yeah, it's a great band. Way to go. Way to go, guys. From wherever you're from. I should probably have done that research, but you know, sometimes I just, I do at one point and then it escapes my brain because 9 million other things crowded out. So anyways, let's talk to Mr. Jeff Rickley. And like I said, we're marking the anniversary of the War All the Time record, which, pound for pound could be the best Thursday record. Some people argue that. I'm personally still maybe siding on, Full Collapse, but there's bangers on all the Thursday records, let's be honest. So that is an anniversary. And then also Jeff, like I said, is a published author. Go check out his book, Someone Who Isn't Me. Came out on Rose Books. Love it. And we talk about all the things. So here is Jeff. The early 2000s, as it were,
okay,
where our paths crossed at the beautiful Long Island Club, Backstreet Blues, if I'm not mistaken.
Oof.
And I know, and I know that you felt like this as well, where it's like when you're, you know, doing those early tours and you happen to be playing with a band that you actually like,
yeah,
and you're, you know, you kind of like circle that date on the calendar or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And I remember, obviously, we got connected via our friend Tom, who you used to live with from The Assistant and every other band ever under the sun.
And yes. Alsatia, yeah.
Exactly. And I remember being so impressed, not only with, I was already a fan of Thursday, but that you like actually enjoyed my band, but like it wasn't, but it, I don't know, it was just, and I know you know the feeling of like, when a person actually expresses their like, no, like I'm not just saying that just to say that, like I legitimately like your band.
Right.
And the reason I bring that up is because you, even though obviously we're both old and we've been around the scene for a long time, you still strike me with that earnestness where it's like, yes, maybe you're not, you know, espousing your love for bands, you know, every day on the internet or whatever, but you're still engaged and clearly you still care about it. And I realize this is a big question to start off, but
yeah,
how do you keep that? Like, I guess, you know, I don't want to say intensity, but like, how do you keep that fanness inside of you where you're just like, yeah, I'm still genuinely a fan of stuff as opposed to, you know, many that just get jaded and are like, oh yeah, I'm only going to listen to or care about the things that I cared about when I was younger or whatever.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I always do it well. I still love music so much, and I am very much of the belief that like nobody ever gets it right or wrong. Really, there's just a lot of different ways to do it, and a lot of different beautiful elements of like the human experience that you can bring out in music. And so I'm always trying to see like what else the possibilities are, you know. And I think every generation kind of comes up with its own visionaries, and you know, it's a new life and a new world that's so different than the world that I grew up in. So I expect to see new reactions to that. And I just think, you know, there's just always great stuff out there. And I also try not to force myself to be into any era, or, you know, if somebody's like, oh, you gotta check out this band, this will be the band that does it for you, and I hear them and I don't really love it, I won't like beat myself up with it. I'll just be like, okay, yeah, for whatever reason, doesn't really speak to me. I'm sure it's really good. You know what I mean? Like people tell me, oh, this is the band, and I'll just be like, okay. But
right,
you know, every 1 out of 10 recommendations, I'll find something that I really love. And, you know, last year we got to bring out Gel, and they were like a major, like, I love this band, you know, and they're doing something like, I couldn't even put my finger on what was different about them. It was just, there was something about it. And when we were on tour, I was like, oh, I think it's that they really are like younger kids, and they're like super into like power violence and all this cool stuff that I grew up on. But they're also like really into like listening to dance music sped up to 1.5 speed on YouTube and like going crazy in the parking lots before shows. So, you know what I mean? It's just like such a different, It's like totally different lens. You know what I mean? Where that's normal and totally compatible with like having like Charles Bronson in your van or whatever. You know what I mean? Like it just, and so I love that. I love that that's like, you know, there's a lot of overlap, but the places where we don't overlap, that's where all this new stuff comes in that I can learn from them and see how awesome, like, you know, cause even just, I got to play a song with them. I played guitar on a song like every night on that tour, or at least a couple nights on that tour. And they were so fast. Like it's so much faster. Like when I played it live with them, I was like, this is so much faster even than the record, which was already fast. And I was like, okay, I get it. They're listening to this stuff at like 1.5 speed. Like they love fast music. You know what I mean? So I just try and stay open, but also not like, I don't make it part of my job. Like I'm not like constantly like, I got to keep up with what the kids are into. You know what I mean? I think that would make me really jaded, or I would just not like stuff and I'd kind of retreat back to my bubble or something, you know?
Yeah, no, I understand exactly what you're talking about, where it's like you, cause there's clearly no blueprint for aging gracefully within the context of punk or hardcore.
Yeah,
like
true,
it's just
truly.
Like, and, but you can recognize the fact that it's like, okay, this behavior or music style, whatever, it may not be for me, but it, that is what can excite you because to your point, it's something that is new and you haven't seen before. And that's what can kind of get you, you know, thinking about either your own music or your own art in a different way. And that is exciting to engage with.
Yeah. And, you know, I for me, the closest to a blueprint for me of how to age gracefully would be Walter from Quicksand. You know, he's not that much older than me, but he's, you know, we're almost exactly 10 years apart. Our birthday is the same weekend. So, you know, I've gotten to celebrate with him before on tour our birthdays, but, even just that little bit of like, you know, that decade extra that he has on me, I just get to watch how he navigates just a little ahead of the road, you know, and I just find he does it with such grace, you know, and when he'll turn me on to new stuff, you know, of younger kids even than I know about. And if I turn him on to something and he doesn't like it, he'll like kind of ask me what I like about it so he can look at it through that lens, you know, and I just really appreciate that about Walter. You know what I mean? Like he's really like somebody I feel like I can look up to, and he's not trying too hard, but he's not also ignoring the kids. And he's just kind of, yeah, he just kind of like is so himself. And I'm like, okay, that's what I want to be. I just want to be so myself. There's nothing else that I can be.
Right. Right. And it's true. Like when you, I guess, put that energy out, as metaphysical as that sounds, you know, a lot of stuff just ends up finding you because you're active, you're, you know,
playing shows here and there. You're just, you know, mixing it up, and you're not, you know, so far removed where the things aren't going to run across. Because, I mean, if for you, it's like exciting when bands are submitting to go on tour with Thursday. Like, you legitimately can listen to them and be like, oh, I never heard this band. Like, let's show. Oh, wow. Okay. I see what they got going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. I mean,
yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah. For sure. It kind of, you know, glossing over a lot of the biographical stuff just based on the fact that, you know, you've clearly painted that picture, but there are certain aspects where it's like, I didn't even know you were born in Providence until I was obviously doing my, you know, beautiful research of you online. and then you, what age did you actually move to Jersey? Was that when you went to college, or were you always
I went to high school and like a good amount of grade school in New Jersey.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. And what prompted the move between Providence and Jersey?
So my parents met at like the first co-ed dorm in the country in Providence. At Brown, they both were full scholarship, like at Brown, both from backgrounds where they couldn't have paid for school if they didn't have a full scholarship.
Sure.
And then when they finished grad school, my dad was a chemist. My dad was a chemist, and he was, you know, New Jersey, which, you know, if you've ever driven on some of our major highways through Newark and stuff like that, it's a huge chemical industry in New Jersey. So that was, we came down here so my dad could work in industrial chemical, you know, stuff.
Right. Exactly. Which, I mean, clearly you've obviously followed in his footsteps.
I mean, it's funny because my mom on the other side was like a 18th century literature major and named me after Geoffrey Chaucer and stuff, you know, like, and,
right.
And
totally.
And I just like was fully on my mom. Like, I was like, I'll go that way. I'll check out like the humanities or whatever they used to call it, you know?
Right.
But I've always loved my dad's like passion for science. You know, his hobbies are like particle physics. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. It's like, ultimately, I mean, I think the thing that you, once you have perspective on your parents actually being real human beings, the thing that is exciting when you recognize what excited them, like they weren't just doing the, like some parents are obviously doing the job to, you know, do the job because that's like what they've trained to be or whatever. But when you see them get excited about, it's like, oh no, like you actually care about chemistry. Like that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that either of them went into like, I don't know that either of them went into like where their passion in that subject is. You know, it's like it kind of adapted to what job they got. And, you know, I definitely saw frustration many years. And in my lifetime in New Jersey, we watched the chemical industry like move again. And my dad's like, I'm going to stay put and totally trained to do something else from the bottom. So, yeah, it's, you know, I definitely was disillusioned with the like, you know, the jobby job, you know, like train really well, get to the highest in your field and then have no job anyway. You know, it's kind of like that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Right. Is this what they call the rat race?
Yeah,
as they say?
Yeah. It's for the birds.
Yeah, exactly. And are you an only child? I actually don't know that fact about you either.
Yeah, I am.
Okay. That's probably why I liked you so much when we met.
Yeah, it's how you become a singer. It's starting as an only child, you know?
demanding attention from everybody around
right.
you.
That's right.
And I'm going to presume that, like, as you were, you know, like junior high school and stuff like that, and considering that you said you gravitated towards what your mom was maybe interested in, were you like a pretty bookish kid as far as like, you know, love of reading early and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I was, but more so music, you know, like that. As soon as I like latched onto music, that was kind of it. I just, it's all I thought about. It's all I did. It was just like, probably like, I would say like a pretty unhealthy, it's sometimes pretty unhealthy obsession. But you know, when I was a kid, you could still go to like, you know, Fugazi shows were $5, but regular shows were like $8.50. You know what I mean? It wasn't like Fugazi was $5 and like everybody else was $25, you know? So I went to shows a lot and I could get a bus into the city for, I think it was $1.25 when I was in high school. So it was just like, I just spent all my time going to shows and buying records. And I had a girlfriend in high school who used to steal records. You know, I wasn't really
right.
I was too square for that. And I was like, man, I don't know, not records. Like, you want the bands to get paid. But yeah, no,
right.
It was all I did. It was music, music, music. And even like, looking at like writing and stuff, I just thought like lyricists were better writers, you know, than most of the writers that I liked. I liked, you know, I liked some super pretentious stuff as a kid too, but I was more passionate about lyricists and the way they wrote.
Right, right. And the intro to independent music like that, because, you know, either you or I had the luxury of leaning on an older brother or sister. Was it introduced to you via, you know, just friends, or were you just like randomly poking around skate videos and stuff like that?
One of my friends growing up had an older sister that I had a huge crush on, and she was like, oh, you like Nine Inch Nails? And I was like, yeah, I had heard Nine Inch Nails like randomly. I was walking and I heard across the street a boombox playing like the first Nine Inch Nails record, and it was playing the song Down in It. And I had really liked, like, in my high school, like where I grew up, there was this place called The Rink in Bergenfield, which is like where like Naughty by Nature and Queen Latifah and like all these like young hip hop groups would play in New Jersey. And so like when I was a kid, I really loved A Tribe Called Quest and Nas and stuff like that. Like I was really into hip hop, and like you know, from the time I was like 7 or 8, like I really would like make my dad get me cassette singles of all the big hip hop songs, you know. But when I heard Down in It blasting across the street in this boombox, I like crossed the street and I was like, what is, you know, I just like these strangers, I was like, what is, I need to know what this is, you know. And they're like, oh yeah, like they didn't even, I remember the girl that told me, she didn't stop dancing, she was like, it's Nine Inch Nails, like she was dancing like outside, it was so sick, you know what I mean, like her energy right. was amazing. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna go get the Nine Inch Nails tape. So I went and got that and got really into it. And then the friend's older sister who I had a crush on was like, you like Nine Inch Nails? Like, you know what I mean? Like, are you like kind of cool? Like, holy crap, I can't believe it. So she made me like a mix with all kinds of stuff like that on it. You know, The Cure and all kinds of stuff, you know, Morrissey and...
right.
I just got
here's all the sad sack music.
Yeah, yeah. Here's all the sad sack music that they used to call at the time. I think they called it like college rock or something, you know, all that kind of stuff too. REM and
sure.
And I just like sort of dove in deep. And then a few like I think there was like the movie for like Pump Up the Volume came out maybe like a year or two later. And that's like where I heard Peter Murphy the first time. You know, there's just like, it was sort of like it unfolded like that, because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like the era of the internet where you could find out as easily about stuff. You kind of had to go from one band to the next band and be like, okay, you like Nine Inch Nails? Like, well, he's also in this band called Pigface. And then you go get Pigface and it's like, have you heard Ministry? And then you get Ministry. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that was kind of like it. And around then I got my mom into a band that she thought was stupid. She thought U2 was really stupid. And like, she was sick of hearing them on her commute to work on the radio. But I made her take me to see them when I was like, I think 10. Mm-hmm. And the performance like moved her to tears, and she became like a obsessive U2 fan. And we started going to see concerts all the time, and then I would ask to see like the opening bands like play their own shows. And then she started like letting me go to other shows. And, you know, at first they took me to all the shows that I went to, but then it was kind of like, nah, it's a show. You'll be safe. You'll be fine. Like, it was also, you know, the very early 90s, and people were like, yeah, I got work, kid. You can go to the city and go see a show.
Even right.
In high school, you know, it's a school night, whatever.
Yep.
So yeah. And there used to be this show too called 120 Minutes that's like the first time I heard Curve. The first time I heard the Smashing Pumpkins when they put out Gish. You know, it's just like all these bands felt like such like great best kept secrets, you know?
Oh boy. Oh boy. I love to talk about our friends at Rockabilia, longtime supporters of this podcast and longtime supporters of the independent music world, because they sell merch that is officially licensed from these bands. And I don't care if you're into like AC/DC, Avenged Sevenfold, Alice in Chains, Slipknot, Eminem, Green Day, Ghost, the list goes on and on and on. And they have really cool items as well. They sell like skate decks. They sell lava lamps. So many cool things. But anyways, you need a promo code because this will get you 10% off of your entire order. It is 100 words or less. That's the number 100 words or less. Order from them. They ship to you from the Midwest in the United States of America. Gets to you very, very fast. Super amazing customer service in case you run into any issues. Because honestly, customer service, that's like something that's really important. Even if things are going right, just to have that as a backup, it's awesome. So all officially licensed, like I said, that means the bands get paid. Everybody that is an official rights holder gets taken care of, and everybody wins. And then plus you can buy stuff for your friends and family because it's an all-in-one shop. It's amazing. So go to rockabilia.com, browse around. They have some pretty deep discount sales over there right now, like 70% off some items. So it's incredible. Go to rockabilia.com, shop to your heart's content, and use the promo code 100 words or less. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray. Well, I love that idea because I was actually going to ask, like, once you started to, you know, bring left of center stuff home to your parents, they probably were like, okay. I mean, they were permissive enough to, like you said, let you go to shows and experience it. But did they think of the stuff that you were getting into, especially once you started to, you know, it's like, oh, you know, straight edge vegetarianism and like all these things, were they weirded out by it? Or were they like, oh, I guess this is what Jeff's into.
Yeah, I mean the first subculture that I ever got like super deep into is industrial music. And I think after that, like a year after that, getting into like hardcore, it was kind of like, yeah, it's nice that you want to be like a little more like clean cut and not like go into the limelight and getting your, you know, getting like held overnight in at the Tombs, you know what I mean, for doing right. some stupid thing or getting caught hold, like, and I was so innocent as a kid that like I literally would hold other people's drugs and not take them and stuff when I was really young, you know. So I kind of like was getting in trouble for stuff that I wasn't actually doing when I was really young. And then by the time hardcore came around, they're like, wait, you want to go to an all ages show at a youth center with a bunch of straight edge kids? Like, yeah, that's great, go for it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're safe there.
Yeah. They'd be like, you do seem a little angry though. Like when I cut all my hair off and started lifting weights, they were like, you do seem a little angry. That didn't last very long though. So
I was going to say, I cannot even wrap my head around you going through a phase like where you're like, dude, I'm going to get swole, bro.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really weird. It was like senior year. I had like a whole bunch of like weird stuff happen. And a lot of it is not like a lot of what Full Collapse is about. Something happened, like an era that happened in high school where like had a friend die and then like had some horrible stuff happen otherwise. And I just got really, really angry and I stopped like looking people in the eye and I started like blasting 108 and Snapcase and like I just wanted to be like completely self-sufficient and not need anybody. You know what I mean? That whole thing. And, yep. And I made a lot of friends in college because of it, because I was like, you know, like immediately as soon as I got there, like all the hardcore kids kind of banded together. Yep. And And then, like, you know, I kind of came back to myself, and that's when I got into more of like what they would call emo. At the time, I was like, this is hardcore too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Texas is the Reason is still hardcore. Like, You and I is still hardcore. Like, you know, all the stuff that, like, they were like, you're fucking emo now. I was like, it's not fucking emo. Don't call it that. It's like the worst name. Don't call it that.
Totally. This is betraying what I define as hardcore. Come on, guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Rainer Maria is hardcore because they played our basement. So they're still hardcore. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. They undoubtedly played with Spaz at one point, ABC No Rio. Okay. No doubt.
No doubt.
Hitting that college experience, I know that's obviously when, you know, you really were throwing shows in your basement, et cetera, et cetera. Once you started down that path and clearly, like, school started to drift away in regards to priorities, like, was there a proverbial life path, as it were, where it's like, you know, were you going to go into teaching because that's kind of what you're, you know, were gravitating towards and studying, or what was the plan?
Yeah, I had a really weird experience in college, which was that during the orientation weekend, they still used to do this, like, placement testing, you know, where you go take a standardized test and they'd, like, tell you what classes you were allowed to take.
Yep.
And, like, I swear it was, like, not that long before, like, I had just tried LSD for the first time, and I ended up taking it that weekend, not thinking that my test was right then, and then getting like, no, it's right now, actually. And I was like, oh no, I'm like fully tripping, like hallucinating, and I have to take this test. So I went and took this like placement test, and it was literally like, I could see, it was almost like the answers on the test were filled in already. Like, I didn't even have to read the questions. I could just see what box was supposed to be. And so I filled them all out, and I placed so high that I literally didn't have to take any required classes. I was allowed to take all electives for my entire 4 years. Like, I got into like this honors program. It was so wild. And so I just took like all these, like, poetry, dance in the body, and the literature of the other with it, like Edward Said class on Orient, you know, his book Orientalism, and all these, you know, courses that I was interested in. And I realized after like 2 years of that, like, oh, I just need to be a teacher, and I'll take a few teaching courses. And then, you know, it was a 5-year teaching program with Teach for America that I was doing. So that was kind of like, that's where I was at. But like, the most of my curriculum was like just totally stuff that I was interested in, you know, oh, Russian literature. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, no science,
right?
No history, no accounting, no math. Like, I was like, nah, I'm not doing it. If I can pick, I'm not doing anything like that. You know, all the useful stuff.
Totally. Talk about like the most loaded gun you could give a kid going into college. Just like, hey, what's going to shoot yourself in the foot for the next while? How about this? Just take whatever you want, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it would have been good if I had been like, because I got really close. We got, before we started touring, I just had one semester left. And I had a really, like, I had like a 3.9 or something. You know what I mean? I wasn't like slacking off, but.
Right. You were putting the effort.
Yeah. We all decided like, this is something we should do. We should take this year and tour and see what happens. And it was literally right at the end of that year, like right at the end of the year that we took off, that it just like blew up out of nowhere. You know, we were all kind of like already making plans to do other things.
Of course. Well, yeah, you have that, especially, I mean, I know every band goes through that discussion where it's like, all right, let's take a year. Let's take 6 months. You put some, you know, arbitrary time on it. And then irregardless of what anybody has going on in their life, it's like, all right, whatever, we'll just drop everything. It's like, oh, damn. All right. Well, we were close, but whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. It was like, it was one of those decisions too, that was kind of like, well, we signed a victory, and it was like, well, you know, like, they're able to put out Dead Guy and stuff. Like, we should all take off school. And then as soon as we take off school and start touring, like, we find out like they don't even like us, and that like they fired the person that signed us. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, okay. Maybe this is the wrong time to quit.
Totally, totally. You're like, listen, we can't tour with Hi-Fi and the Roadburners. I'm sorry. We just can't do that. I wanted to hit on specifically War All the Time, because obviously that's, you know, what you are celebrating this year, and you know, touring around it and everything. And that, you know, I was lucky enough to obviously not only see you many times during that juncture, but then also have a front row seat with, you know, our friends in Thrice and knowing those guys really well, and then knowing you guys decently well and watching both of your bands, you know, ascend on this weirdo major label trajectory where obviously everybody was the next Nirvana. And during that time, I realize this may be a, you know, difficult question to articulate, but who did you feel like you could, I guess, rely on during that time? Was it, you know, were you leaning on obviously your bandmates? The kind of, you know, typical family and friends? Like, did you feel like you had to kind of like close up the circle, or did you feel like you could expand it?
Yeah, no, we were keeping it pretty insular then because it had all happened so quickly. And it was so surprising. And, you know, all these people who didn't have our back suddenly were our best friends. You know what I mean? Where it was like, I don't really feel like I can trust a lot of people because now suddenly Victory says that they had our back from the beginning. And I know they didn't, you know, I know they didn't.
Or right.
So it was like band, we leaned on each other. We leaned on Alex at Eyeball Records. We leaned on our booking agent, Tim Bohr, who, you know, is like the one person we stayed with through our entire career. And that was kind of it. You know, we circled the wagons. We really, when Island signed us and we went to Island, we had a really good team there at first. You know, they all ended up leaving like a few months into War All the Time coming out. And that was like a huge blow because we had like let ourselves trust them and they had really treated us well and done some great things for us. So it felt really strange to have them all kind of disappear.
Right. Yeah. It is that interesting, you know, security blanket when all of a sudden you start to understand what a person who loves music that like works at a record label, how that could be taken away from them because it's like, oh, they just left that job to go do another job. But like, you're with us, right? what's the deal?
Right. But also like, yeah, you start to understand it's kind of like one of those things that sometimes that's the way the wind blows, where it's like the key guy at the top that everybody knows, if he leaves, then they want to stay on their team, you know, and they'll have to leave the artist. But they're like, this is like, we all know each other. We all work together every day. We want to stay together. It's like, I can understand that. You know what I mean? Like it was just really unfortunate timing for us because it wasn't even at like the end of one cycle. It was like right in the middle of when we needed people like working on the record. And it was like totally our moment. It was our top 10 Billboard, you know, record. And just sort of fell off a cliff. You know, we went from selling like 20,000 records a week to like not knowing if it was in stores anymore. You know what I mean? It was like that drastic where we were like, what happened?
Yeah, right. Like someone needs to make a phone call to someone. Like, yeah. I think this is, there's something happening here.
And I remember like, people being like, I'm going down there to talk to somebody since they won't pick up the phone, and getting there and being like, there's nobody here. Like, right. There's nobody here. There's no one in the office. Like, nobody. It's like, okay.
Well, right.
Then we were well and truly screwed, I guess.
Yeah. Then this seems like a real sinking ship, as it were.
Yeah.
The, and I know during that time as well, like that, you know, you did have a little bit of understanding, obviously, of how, you know, business implications worked and, you know, contracts and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You personally, like, did you try to stay as close to possible as on that stuff? Or was it like, as the, you know, larger the band grew, you kind of wanted to remove yourself a little bit from that? Or what was your, I guess, approach?
Yeah, I stayed very connected. Like Eyeball, I was the point guy. You know, Victory, I still was kind of like one of two point guys. Island, like I was always in the building. Like, you know what I mean? Everybody there, we got along great. After Island, like after that whole thing fell apart, I was very like disenchanted with the whole thing. Was kind of like, somebody else can deal with this. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't talk to the label anymore. Like, these people don't care about us. You know what I mean? Like, they don't care. Like, it's cool.
Yeah.
Like, we're part of their job and they're going to do a good job if they can, but like, they don't care.
Yeah, for sure. Right. It's like, it's the, you know, once bitten, twice shy thing where it's like, oh yeah, like maybe this is good for my mental health to not be as like, you know, in the boardrooms, as it were.
Right. Totally. And the irony, of course, is that like after we left Ireland, we did a couple records on Epitaph, and the product manager there that we worked with that I was like very hands off with was Matt McGreevy. Matt McGreevy lives across the street from me now, and he's like my buddy. You know what I mean? So it's like, yep. Not at the time when we were working, like I was friendly with him, but I wasn't like involved. And now like we go to shows and stuff all the time. And it's very funny that he was like the one I decided to check out on. You know what I mean? It's like ironic. Right. Very ironic.
Yeah. And that, I mean, talk about a person who obviously is in the industry, but is not a, you know, a suit,
yeah,
so to speak.
Really cares. Yeah. It's very funny.
Right. Right. You actually talk to them about music and they'll give you their honest opinion. It's like, wow, this is not like how it's supposed to be. I realize I'm kind of putting you on the spot on this, but I'm sure like when you reflect and think about that particular era, I know you were most likely put into weird radio shows and tours and like press opportunities. Are there things that stick out in your mind as far as being very emblematic of that experience where it's like, oh yes, like just as a random aside where it's like, I remember, you know, talking to my friends in Seosin and they were talking about how they had to go into like a children's hospital to play an acoustic set. It was one of those things where it's like, whose idea was this?
Yeah.
And it was like, that's awful. But anyways, like any, it doesn't have to be as extreme as that, but like what, you know, what experiences were kind of emblematic of that era for you?
Yeah. I remember we were on this show in Chicago. I don't know if it still exists, but it was a big deal at the time, a radio show called Man Cow.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. I remember that show. Yeah.
And it was live. It was a live broadcast thing. And like you had to get up at 6 to go down there. So it's like, you know, get the singer up at 6. He's like the one guy that needs to rest or else he loses his voice. So they get me up there. And like, they had me on and immediately I was like, I fucking hate these people. Like immediately I just was like this, like 2-bit bad comedians, like trying to be offensive, like mocking somebody with cancer. Like I don't remember like exactly how it came up, but it just like immediately I was like, no. I'm like, nope, not cool, whatever, don't give
right.
Like, I was like, I know this is supposed to be good for us, but like I don't, like this is a good time to plant my flag in the ground and be like, I just don't like you and I don't like anything you stand for. Like I don't care if you're funny and popular, like I'd rather have no fans, like you know what I mean? Like I was basically like drop dead on the like live on the radio, and they just kind of pulled me and were like, dude, what the hell? And I was like, yo, what do you want, man? Like this, you put me here, like you put me
right.
Here, like you don't know me. Obviously, because
right, you're like this could not have gone more poorly because this should have been vetted in some capacity, and yeah, you just saw this as a press opportunity.
Yeah, like I didn't know what it was, and I just was, you know, people would put schedules in front of me, and every so often something like that would happen, and I'd just be like, I just no, I'm like disgusted by your bullshit U.S. mainstream culture politics. Like I was like, you know, I was just like. I was like, so like, you know, you get like, you can get wound up to a certain amount. Like the, I'll play along, you know, I mean, it's good for the band and some more people to hear about it. And, you know, I'll bite my tongue when somebody says something that I think is like incredibly wrong, you know? And then at some point it's just like, nope, not anymore. Yeah. I don't care.
It's like the, you know, it's like the film network where it's just like, you know, I'm mad as hell and I can't take it anymore.
Yeah. I saw something recently where they were trying to do like a network thing. And I was like, oh, this is like their bad version of network. I kept on saying, I was like, this is like some whack version of network.
Totally. It's like, it, you know, manufactured like to a T where it's like, this person feels like this is their moment in the sun. But like,
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
They're getting really mad about something that you shouldn't be mad about. Yeah. It's like this, but they changed the Monster Energy flavor. What? That's really what you're gonna stand on? Okay, I guess.
They took the alcohol out of White Claw.
Totally. Wait, they dropped it 0.1%. I can't even believe it. What's the world coming to? And I know you've been public about obviously, you know, every substance abuse, you know, issue that you've had in every iteration of your life. I chuckle at it. Like I should be laughing at your problems, but,
yeah. Good.
Right. Exactly. You either laugh or you cry. And I think we should laugh right here. The notion that you were obviously, you know, starting to navigate the idea of you being such a public person, and then also the idea of like everything that you were doing behind the scenes to, you know, put one foot in front of the other. Was it the notion of that idea of being in front of everybody and not trying? And I know that you in your head were like, I'm just being like the most typical walking cliche of a person. Like, how were you, I guess, having those conversations internally, or were you even having those? You're just like, well, I need this substance in order to, you know, be able to navigate the world.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, when I was a kid and all that stuff happened, like that Full Collapse was about, like the doctor's response was like, put him on 5 milligrams of Valium, give him this, give him that, you know, give him, and then here's some narcotic painkillers for, like, you know, the broken bones or whatever. And I just, you know, and then I would go to another country where like a low dose opiate would be available over the counter. And it just like got so normalized to me that I honestly, like, it just, I don't know. It was almost like somebody telling you not to curse at the dinner table. It's just like, sure, sure. Nobody's using drugs. Right. Like, everybody I meet is using some kind of drug. They're drinking, or they're like, you know, and it's, there's something going down. Like yep. It's just medicine. You know what I mean? It's just medicine. It's like, it's kind of like something that I thought about like a lot. And, you know, it's like, to me, it was like, you know, if I went out with the guys and got drunk and did some like cocaine or something and got annoying for like, you know, 3 hours, then I was like, that's drugs. And that's like, it's so stupid. Like, I'll do it, but it's so dumb and it's annoying and nobody likes you when you do drugs. You know what I mean? I just kind of thought like, it's not really a problem. I don't really like drugs. It's just sort of a thing that every so often I'll do. And then for right. some reason on the other side, like the benzos and the, you know, the opiates and stuff, it just felt more like, well, this just manages like the problem of me. You know, this is just like, this is just the reality, is that like, I can't cope without medicine and everybody takes medicine, so I'm okay. And that was kind of like, I think that's how that became such a, just was so normal, and it just like was able to spin out of control because like, I really didn't have my eye on the ball. You know, I was just like, well, I'm not an addict. Like, I'm the one who like doesn't need to drink every night. I'm the one who doesn't need cocaine. Like, you know what I mean? You just start to think, if I compare my problem to other people's problems, like I'm like the least of everybody's worries. You know what I mean? And once you start saying stuff like yep. that, it's like really easy to lose track of where you actually are.
Yeah. No, that's really, especially to your point, once you're searching out for those stories and you see other people's behaviors and like, yeah, you're totally, it's so easy to step into that justification role of like, oh yeah, dude, I am not doing 3 bumps a night. I'm doing 0. I'm golden.
Yeah. I do my taxes by hand. Like, I don't think that this could be a drug problem if like I take my pills in the morning, have a cup of coffee and like do the paperwork. I think I'm probably okay. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely. It's like, I am purely functioning with this stuff and it helps me function. So therefore I yeah. of course don't have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
By transitive property.
Yeah.
Evilgreed.net is the place you need to point your web browser to look at all of these amazing stores from record labels and bands that all fit a certain type of genre, which is what I like to call artistic heavy stuff. So if you're listening to this show, I can guarantee you, like, I can literally pay you money to be like, here, I'll give you $1, go onto the site and you will find at least 10 bands that you're into or record labels that you're into. They ship from Berlin, Germany, but do not let that scare you off, because shipping rates are very advantageous for us here in the United States right now. Go to evilgreed.net and just like, here's a small listing of some of the record labels they work with. We're talking about Days, Deathwish, End Hits, Flat Spot. We're talking about Metal Blade, Maggot Stomp, Revelation, Run for Cover. So you kind of get the vibe that they're going for. And they also work specifically with bands like, you know, Botch and Deaf Heaven and Blood Incantation. It's such a great place for all of the things that are heavy and you most likely are super, super into. And then you can buy them all at one place and it ships it to you and boom, you win. It's great. So go to evilgreed.net. Just pop into the search bar, be able to type in some band names or record label names, and then boom, you're off and running. And all of a sudden you got like $300 worth of stuff. You got to like pick through and be like, okay, I'm going to ask for this for my birthday. Here's some Christmas stuff, you know, really fun things, because that's the way that I like to buy stuff. So maybe I'm just giving you advice that you don't need on how to buy merchandise. Jeez, it's ridiculous. But evilgreed.net is the place to go and shop away.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Something that always has struck me about you, you know, just like knowing you and observing you, where it doesn't seem to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like that there is this, you know, vision board manifestation. And you know what I mean by that, where it's like, there are people that definitely exist on this planet that have that, like, all right, this is what I'm going to achieve by, you know, 30, 35, or this is what I'm going to achieve in this year, year and a half. You don't strike me as that sort of person, and you let things happen to you, either good or worse. Do you identify with that description, or do you feel like you land somewhere on that spectrum between those two that I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I'm not career driven, but I am incredibly driven as an artist. I sort of like will have a vision in my head of what a work could be. And then I'm like, nothing can stop me until I'm done. You know, like it's like, I don't know. It's just a total commitment to finishing what I start. And I think, you know, I've run record labels and I've done all kinds of other stuff where I've been a mentor. And the main thing that separates me from some of my much more talented friends is that I just always finish. Basically, I always take things to completion. I always get there. It doesn't matter how arduous the task, I will get to the end. And that is like its own kind of drive. You know, it's like I don't really care what that does for me career-wise, but I just have this almost spiritual devotion to the work of artwork, you know, whether it's writing a book or making a song or seeing, you know, an event pulled off the way that I can imagine it being pulled off. It's just it's a strange thing, and sometimes I step back and I look down at my life, which is so consumed with art. You know, it's the main thing that I've had in my life. You know, I don't have kids. I don't, you know, there's all these things that haven't been my path as a human being on this planet. And I think, like, am I insane that I just get so obsessed with these little, like, building these little dioramas or right. something? You know, like, what am I doing? Am I, like, still a kid playing with sandcastles? You know what I mean? Like, I sometimes it really trips me out, you know, and then I can kind of, like, come back to earth and say, like, well, no, you know. Like humans need art to live. They need music. They need stories. They need things to immerse themselves in that aren't just the grind, you know, the cycle of producing and consuming, you know? And then I try to say, like, no, it's okay. You know, like, I'm on my own path and I love what I love. So I'm just going to work on that, you know?
Right. Right. It's the act of finishing. And everybody always talks about, you know, you need to get satisfaction of the process of rather than the thing being done. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it sounds like you get satisfaction all along the way. And then on top of it, you actually finish it, which is, you know, that's like 90% of the battle.
Yeah. I love, you know, for the most part, there are exceptions to this, but for the most part, I really love the process of making things. I have been in some situations in my life where I don't enjoy the process. I find it incredibly painful. And either way, whether it's a painful process or whether it's one that I just love to live in, like when I was writing my book, I just like really just loved existing in that world. It's something that I need to finish, because if I can't finish it, I can't let it go. And it's like, at some point you just have to let it go and move on. You know, it's, it really is like, you just gotta move past it and then let other people have it. And, you know, especially with the book, it's like people have been really like, people find out about it slower. You know, it's not like you listen to it once on the internet and you know it. It's like you have to hunt it down and then buy it, and then you get it and you have to find time to read it, and then you have to finish it and digest. It's like a pretty heavy book. And so like people are still coming up to me just having had read it and giving me like this intense review of it. And I'm like, this is so cool. But I am like, you know, I have to be on the next thing now, you know, that's just my life. And it's a weird one, you know?
Yeah. I was actually, that dovetails perfectly. It's like, you know how this interview is going to go, Jeff. I was fortunate enough to order the book and get it and read it and consume it. And, you know, without gassing you up too much, love the experience. You read it, and obviously knowing you, like, it just, I was like, oh, this is just like hanging out with Jeff, but like the weird dark part, and like I'm okay with that. But the interesting experience for me was a straight edge adult reading this that has like literally never done drugs, and it felt like I was doing drugs, like the experience of it. And I'm sure some people have articulated some version of this, but like, you know, flowing out of different lines of thought and different, you know, aspects of the story. And I'm sure a portion of it was intentional, or was it simply just a byproduct of obviously the way that you were putting the novel together?
Yeah, no, it was an incredibly, you know, some people have said like, oh, it's so raw. And I just have to laugh, because it's not, you know what I mean? Like there is like a, it is meant to have the surface of something that's quite confessional and direct and raw and happening sort of stream of conscious, but actually like, you know, 12 full drafts, full rewrites. You know, I went to classes to learn how to do certain techniques, and the whole thing is like, there's the process behind it was so much, you know, 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, 5 years, like it's thousands of hours literally. And so, you know, there were all different ways that the drug experience in the book is meant to come across. And one of them is that, you know, like every book, they say like every book needs its sex scenes, you know, it needs like sensual pleasures. And like those don't actually have to be sex scenes. Like Haruki Murakami writes scenes about food, you know, and that's his sensual experience in the books. Like he always like puts in these like lush, you know, like appetizing scenes of cooking. And my sex scenes were drug scenes. And so like there's a certain aspect early on when the character is using drugs, and it's like, you know, it almost comes across as like an ad for doing heroin, you know what I mean? Because it's just like such a vivid, pleasurable experience that the character's in. Obviously, sure. Like there's a toll that has to be paid. And when later on, some of the drug experiences are incredibly unpleasant. But yeah, it was really kind of trying to figure out the way to immerse people in different, in especially the main drug of the book, which is this substance called ibogaine. It's a hallucinogen from an African shrub that lasts anywhere from 24 to 48 hours the trip, and it's a very unpleasant trip. The way to write that hallucination scene, that was really a lot of work to figure out, because there is no other ibogaine novel. There is no other artwork about this substance. So it was like I had to build that language from the ground up. And, you know, I read this one review of the book that was like, it's great, it's beautiful, it's all been done before. And I was like, man, oh man, show me where. You know what I mean? Like nobody's ever written a book about this drug before. So like, I get it. You know right. What I mean? Like I get the idea that there have been drug books before, but like Bret Easton Ellis's cocaine novels are not the same as William Burroughs' heroin novels. It's not the same as, you know, as like Under the Volcano about drinking, you know what I mean? These are all different experiences. And I think this book is, it's very much its own strange nightmare vision of addiction and drugs. And that was it's very intentional. Yeah. Everything in the book, there's not a lot left to chance. You know, every chapter's been taken out, put back in. There's probably a good 20 chapters, even that work with this draft that I took out just for pacing, you know, just being like, this doesn't move as quickly as I'd like. This thing here doesn't really, you know, it's too much information, this thing, you know? So it's not wrong. Yeah.
No, totally. This wasn't just like a light run through. It's like, yeah, I did two passes and we were done. It's like, no, this was hammered by the, you know, the God of Thunder with, you know, all the metaphors you could put in there.
Yeah. We still haven't had a single reader find a mistake in the book, which just goes to show how many times we had it proofread. I mean, I'll go, you know, I was at a reading in Miami this week. And I met somebody at the bookstore and she was like, yeah, I was one of your proofreaders. And I was like, wow, I'm still meeting people who have read this book. Like it's, you know, but Chelsea, it was her first book on the press. And she's like, I want it to be so clean. You know, she's like, I want it to be like flawless. And I was like, I'm in, you know, let's do it.
Yeah. You're like, this isn't a paperback 7-inch. Like this is the real deal. Yeah. A few last things I want to hit on was you know, clearly Thursday exists in a very comfortable space now where you guys, you know, are music industry adjacent, I'd like to say, where it's like, yes, you were participating in playing shows and touring, but don't have to feel that, you know, hearkening back to a earlier statement, the rat race of like, all right, we put out a record and we're going to go tour for 300 days out of the year or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that there is an element of it where the band feels less pressure, but then there's probably an element of the fact that like, oh, now like money can come into the band now. So there is an element of pressure where it's like, oh, now this thing that wasn't a part of our lives for so many years, like, you know, trying to find the balance of those two, or is it just fun? Just period.
Well, that's a really good question. I guess the only answer is, you know, so much of it is so fun. Like playing music is so fun. Like I love everybody associated with Thursday. I really do. And also like some of it can still be so hard, you know, we'll flirt with writing music again and we'll just, you know, it's like everything that broke up the band the first time will just come flooding back in, you know?
And, right.
And when I was saying like, you know, sometimes writing is incredibly painful. Like with Thursday, I don't know why. It's just always been that way. It's just always been so painful. And it's like, usually it's been worth it because, you know, things come out of it that stand the test of time. And that 20 years later, people are still talking about and thinking about and wanting to see us play. And that's beautiful. But it's a funny thing. And so many bands that I love came back, did reunions. I was so excited to see them. And they put out a record that I was like, oh, wish you didn't put that out, you know, like don't love that. So I've been very like, do we need new music? You know what I mean? That's kind of been my line in the band. Like, do we really need new music? Like, I feel like we got like 6 records to choose from, plus like a gazillion B-sides. And, you know, but yeah, it's a strange balance to try and figure out because, you know, it's been 13 years since we made music and people still want to see us for some reason. But also, you know, like I love the music that has come out of this band. If we could do something that it was up to that level or even, you know, ahead of that level, like why wouldn't I want to, you know what I mean? It's the most beloved thing that I've ever done in my life is Thursday. So I'd love to make great art with Thursday again, but everything that comes along with it, we just all find so, so tough. And, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that's what's next for Thursday is figuring out how to write without it feeling like you're dying, you know.
Totally.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it, I guess, you know.
Totally. It's like, I mean, it's like the, you know, the dentist, you got to go to it once or twice a year. And it's like, all right, maybe we'll try it again this year. No, I got a cavity. Okay. I'll pass. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems like, I mean, looking at you as a person, like you, it seems like you clearly have a reverence for the past and you don't, you know, just completely exist in the, you know, I threw a touchdown pass in, you know, my high school football game and like you're only, you know, riding on that laurel, so to speak. But then you also, to your point, you like to see things to fruition and like, you know, constantly moving forward and always looking for the what's next or what have you. do you try to balance the two, or do you basically are just like, no, I'm really just focused on the past. And yes, of course I can, you know, do these anniversary tours and all this stuff, but like, that's just supplemental for me trying to finish the other things I'm working on.
No, it's, I always feel like it's like a strange thing to call an either or situation. You know, for me, it's all one body of work that I've been writing and working on since I was 19, and I continue to make stuff. And it's all tied together. You know, my book clearly couldn't exist without Thursday. All the other stuff that I've done, you know, whether it's like getting to do shows with Ink and Dagger or, you know, all the United Nations stuff, it's all one, for me, it's all one project that I've been working on for a long time with a lot of different people. And I love every stage of it. You know, there are some missteps along the way, and I don't try and revisit my missteps as much. You know, like, I don't think there's a lot off of our first record, off of Waiting, that I love. There's a few songs and I love playing those, but you know, I just basically like anything that's good that I've made, it's still as much a part of me as the stuff that I made last week. You know what I mean? I don't really feel like, oh, that's some other guy's stuff and he was a different person and I don't recognize him anymore. I just, for whatever reason, I totally recognize that guy. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's still me. I'm still like the same naive, you know, sincere, you know, overly sentimental person that I've always been. Like, my art is going to have certain hallmarks. And like, now I'm much more sophisticated than I was back then, but that's like a part of everybody's life. You know what I mean? If you're not getting more sophisticated, what are you doing? So like, I don't look at Full Collapse and say there are things about it that are so naive. I think like, yeah, listen to how innocent that record is. It was so, you know, it was so unpolluted by having your heart broken by things that you used to believe in that you don't believe in anymore. You know what I mean? And yeah, to me, it all just goes together. And I think like, it's all about both, you know, it's all about like embracing what you've done in the past and trying to make something new that's, you know, beautiful and different. And yeah,
it's a continuum.
Right? Yeah, it's just exactly. A continuum. Doesn't feel like it's in any kind of a conflict to me.
Yeah, no, for sure. And to your point, it doesn't have to. It's like, if you feel that, you know, whatever you do in the future will tarnish whatever you've done in the past, it's like, well, maybe you're just looking at it the wrong way. Yeah. And it's like,
Yeah. And also, like, if you truly think you're about going to do something that might tarnish the past, like, just maybe you don't like what you're working on right now. You need to go back to the drawing board. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay. Like, I think it's okay to fail when you're trying to do something. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's all right. You know, you just have to be honest with yourself and say, like, maybe this one wasn't the one. You know, I got to move on.
Yeah. Got to take a swing. You know?
Yeah.
the only thing that you haven't done, I mean, I know you've obviously appeared on television and like to a lesser extent, like maybe you've participated in some, you know, background work in film and stuff like that, because it's like, you know, you've done a podcast technically. Well, you haven't done a musical, right? Like, I mean, you play the band,
musicals.
But like,
yeah, I have a real hard time with musicals. That's a form that I like. Whenever my partner sees something, she'll be like, yeah, I saw Barbie or whatever, like, you're not going to like it. And I'd be like, why? You know, I'm not against Barbie. And she'd be like, it reminded me of a musical. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm probably not going to like it. I'm probably not going to like it.
Right. Well, that's what it's like every marketing ploy in new films that come out that are musicals, like they just get hidden. You know, it's like, whatever, Wonka comes out and people are like, wait, they sing a lot in that? It's like, yeah, they got to hide the fact it's a musical because so many people are allergic to it.
Yeah.
So.
And I don't want to be. I don't know what it is. There's something about the, there's a falsity to it that just pushes right all my buttons, like makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Right. Okay. So musical's out, but like when, you're, you know, you completing the entertainment trifecta, as it were, you know, playing in a band. So like, are you, you know, would you ever, you know, do the, Matty Matheson route of obviously going on the Bear and being the, you know, dorky sidekick or whatever? Like, is that in the future at all?
I don't think that I have the acting thing. I was actually recently at this reading. It was like Richard Hell and a bunch of other writers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really something. And I had some friends that I was sitting with one an actor and one like a director who is doing some acting. And they were like asking me about it. I was like, yeah, I've been in a few music videos. I'm so bad. Like, I'm such a bad actor. Like, I'm so bad. I don't even know. Like, I'll put it, this is how bad I am. When I was mugged at gunpoint, the thief, like, he like made an Instagram with my iPad and it like tagged all my friends. So like it was, everybody knew who mugged me at gunpoint because it was like one of those, like, can you believe how dumb criminals can be? So the local news had me on to talk about like how crazy that was, that somebody like set up like an Instagram for my iPad. And on the news, they asked me to walk down the street at the end. And my girlfriend called me and she's like, oh my God, I saw that thing on the news. Like, you don't even know how to walk on camera. And I was like, I know, I couldn't. I was thinking about it. Like, as soon as they asked me to walk, I was like, wait, how do you like walk on camera? And I got like real like self-conscious and didn't know, like, how do I move my hands when I walk? Do I like, how do I stand up straight?
Right.
I couldn't do it. And I just realized, like, never have me on camera, because like, I'm that guy who'll be like, what do I do with my hands? Should I hold two cups? You know what I mean? Like, what?
Are they both in the pockets, or like one behind my head, or where do I put it?
Yeah. Can I get like boxing gloves? I think I'd be more comfortable.
But Jeff, we're nowhere near a boxing ring. It doesn't matter.
No. Just like in my study, you know, like just chilling.
Can you handcuff me? Maybe I can be a criminal in some capacity.
I don't think it's I can, like, pull off being dead on SVU. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I could do that role.
Totally. Well, at least you have not only the exposure, but the awareness of it, because I think a lot of people that, you know, do get exposure to entertainment, whether it's playing in a band or otherwise, it's like, oh, I've been on a stage, I could probably do something like that. And then they don't get the note that it's like, oh yeah, that's a whole different medium. I hope you realize that.
That was my great fear when I was like writing the book. It was like, I was talking to my agent, she's like, yeah, but everybody knows that you're like the most like literary, like front man, like, you know what I mean? You have a, and I was like, but that's the problem to a bunch of like emo kids I am. But like, now you put me in the middle, like, I'm not as literary as like Don DeLillo, you know what I mean? Like, you're putting me in with the big boys now. Like, what if I'm a fool? You know, and she's like, I'll let you know if you're a fool before you send out the book. And I was like, okay. Cause that is my fear, is like jumping into something because I've had success in music. And just being like, oh, that's so embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed for him. You know what I mean? Like, that's.
Yeah. You're like, listen, I know I can't go toe to toe with you, but like, can we talk about the frail 7-inch? Oh, you don't know frail? Like, sorry, bro.
Yeah. And like, speaking of acting, our boy, our mutual friend, Jeremy Baum. Excellent. I thought he was very good in the Weird Al movie.
Exactly. And that's. And I think that's the fun thing, where it's like you're able to at least just like, you know, dip your toe in, and then whether you get bitten by the bug or not, you know, it's a different story.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, him being born and raised in Burbank, like, you have no choice but to, you know, play a bit part at some point. But yeah. Well, Jeff, I really appreciate you hanging out with me. It was great to pick your brain in ways that I was excited to do. So thank you for doing that.
Ray, I always love when we get to hang out. So this is just a blast.
Yes, we have done it. Thank you very much to Jeff for his time. And thank you for his publicist, Tim, for bringing the idea up and being like, wait a minute, you've never had Jeff on your podcast? That seems insane. Like, I feel like you should have done that by now. And you know what? I didn't. So we made it official. And let's keep making things official, everybody. But no joke, 600 episodes is no small feat. I'm going to pat myself on the back, but I just like the fact that I'm interacting with all of you on a, you know, weekly, monthly, maybe semi-annually basis, regardless of whenever you tap into these episodes. I do greatly appreciate it. This is a fun thing for me to do. And the fact that I've been able to sustain it as long as I have is definitely because of your patronage and support for the show, whether it's financially or whether it's just purely listening. All of those things are not lost on me. So thank you very, very, very much. Next week, the train keeps on moving, baby. Let's go. We have episode 601 with a new friend of mine. His name is Tyler Short. He is the vocalist from Inclination, and he also runs a record label called LDB, which is the Life Death Brigade, that a, you know, fest has jumped up around it. And anyways, I just love Inclination. And he also has a new band called Walk Alone that's really, really good. So yeah, we dig into it all. And I just punished him on his email list for his record label. And I just responded to it one day being like, Tyler, I know it's you and I really want to speak to you on a podcast. And he was like, oh my gosh, I would love to do that. So there we go. All these things happen in really circuitous, weird ways. Or sometimes people just ask me and I say yes, and then vice versa. So anyways, until then, please be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.